Hacer na 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 na. We are the unstable.
Word up.
We're the lyrical gangsters.
Word up.
Tag team champions.
Word up.
And we like it like that. 'Cause we're the unforgiving.
Word up.
And we're the masters of misery.
Word up.
ECW kingpins.
Word up.
And we like it like that.
And we like it like that.
Hello, my name is Bob Bamber and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We are going back in the time machine to November of 1994 for volume 2 of the podcast. Everything that's happened in the WWF this month in its own show. And so this is going to be for ECW. We've got a bit of, we've got Clash of Champions at the end of the show. And we're also going to have a very special segment in the middle, special in the sense that I'm not even on it. Del and Chris Lacey are going to be reviewing, the Triple A pay-per-view in association with WCW. But we are starting with ECW. I'm being joined by Del Muir. Del, how are you?
Hiya, Bob.
Del, let's start with the news. For ECW.
Yep, first bit of the news for ECW last month, Bob, it's got to be the Sandman. Sandman returned to TV this month after the November to November, show on the 5th of the month. He was due to announce his retirement, but it's now come to light that the full plan was actually a set-up by Sandman and his manager, Woman. Earlier in the night, Tommy Dreamer had defeated Tommy Cairo in a match, which we'll run through after the news. And Todd Gordon then accompanied the Sandman after this match out for his quote-unquote retirement ceremony. Sandman was wearing sunglasses and had bandages covering his eyes. The event saw the return of Miss Peaches, who, to put it succinctly now, has assets that she didn't have before. And she then kissed the Sandman before Woman appeared blasting Peaches with a Singapore cane to the head. As she then approached Sandman, Tommy Dreamer committed to defend him, but the Sandman was dramatically removing his sunglasses and bandages. Turns out he can see fine. He then beat down Dreamer to set up a match next month with Tommy Cairo being the special ring enforcer.
This was a busy month for title changes in ECW as we have new tag team champions and not one, but two new TV champions. Firstly, Jason lost his TV championship to Too Cold Scorpio. Todd Gordon reiterated the ruling that the shooter Dean Malenko be banned from ringside. And then the Pitbulls tried to come out, but they also got banned from ringside. And Scorpio won the match despite further interference from Jason Stable. The following week, Dean Malenko, then representing Jason, well, himself as well, defeated Too Cold Scorpio to win the TV title and bring it back into Jason Stable.
And moving on also, another title change, tag team champions are now the Public Enemy. They continued their strong end to the year by defeating Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck to regain the titles. And lastly, Shane Douglas has been making more headlines in ECW. Recent episode of Hardcore TV teased the return of Sherry Martel in the debut of Steve Austin from Stunning Steve Austin fame in WCW. However, Austin would end up being replaced at the event mid-November by Brian Pillman, due to an injury. And the influx of WCW talent for the November 19 show, which also included Kevin Sullivan subbing in for Mikey Whipwreck, due to a legal resolution over the name When Worlds Collide, which WCW had used for their pay-per-view that we'll be reviewing after this segment finishes.
The November to remember. You know, sometimes they call it sports entertainment. And then you get to the extreme. November to remember, I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. You see, because the letters ECW mean a whole hell of a lot to me, Sandman. And everyone from a long time ago says, I don't have what it takes to be here. Right, Sandman? And then all of a sudden, everything happened between me and you. And you want to talk about extreme? Look at these, Sandman. Look at these. And then, Sandman, the worst part of it is you wasted a lot of people's time. Okay? You wasted my time. You wasted all the people who love ECW. You see, I want to be a part of ECW. You want to talk about somebody's face, and you want to talk about getting extreme, Sandman? A lot of people cared about you, but thank God you lifted off the guilt when you did this. Look at my face. Look at my back. I'm not crying. Hey, I've been beat up, and I guess I'll be beat up again, because I'm never going to quit. This is the ECW. And all those people out there,
They're my friends. They want to take time and ask me for an autograph or give me a picture or just to see how I am. And they took the same care in you, Sandman, and you wasted a lot of people's time. You know, where I'm from, Sandman, we got one little motto. If you mess with somebody's friends, you mess with me. Well, you mess with a whole lot of my friends, you mess with my face, and now, Sandman, you want to see extreme? You want to mess up somebody's face, somebody's back? We're going to take it to levels that the people have never seen, Sandman. We're going to take it higher than the extreme. Okay? Look at the face. Look at my back. Sandman, you want to play games? You want to play games? Well, suffering builds character. And I got a whole lot of character. And this is extreme, and this is where I'm going to be. And if I have to die in the ring, then I'm going to die. But Sandman, I'm going to take you with me.
And we will start this month's review by running over the Tommy Dreamer, Sandman kind of segment. But I think we'll start with the match review from the, I think it was the first part of the November 8th show between Tommy Dreamer and Tommy Cairo.
Yeah, back to November to remember. Bob, it was Cairo and returning to the ring to face Tommy Dreamer, obviously, after the full Sandman situation. Bear in mind, this is obviously prior to the Sandman retirement ceremony. Tommy Cairo's back, obviously he's lapping up the crowd by mopping the Sandman. He's out with a Singapore cane, but also a pair of glasses mocking the Sandman's inability to see. Dreamer comes out pretty relaxed to start with, but then just unleashes on Tommy Cairo, following up on the promo stuff we saw at the middle of last month. We start with a brawl, pretty quickly it leads to the outside, and there's a lovely spinning heel kick from Cairo on Dreamer on the outside, landing on the concrete. It then gets back to chair shots, and kind of similar to what we had in June at the King of the Ring, where we had Weight Watch with Art Donovan. We pretty much got Weapon Watch in this match, if you want to keep a note of the weapons that were used here. So far we've seen the Singapore cane, but then getting chair shots. But then Tommy Dreamer's got a lovely spot in the middle where he mimics Sandman on him last month with a pile drive in the ring, doing a full 360 as per the Sandman did to him last month, showing him to the crowd. We then get another cast back to last month with a frying pan coming into the situation.
We don't know if it's the same frying pan or a different one.
Well, that's it. It could be the fans get his own gimmick with bringing a bit of kitchen hardware in every month, but we do have another frying pan. Reports suggest that it may be a different frying pan.
We'll keep you updated with frying pan news as and when.
We've got the frying pan back in it. It's then snapped over the head of Cairo when Tommy Dreamer hits him with it. We then come onto a paddle from a rowing boat. We've got an oar in this match.
Yes.
So then we've got that. Then a DDT for Dreamer on Cairo. Cairo then Irish whips him into the railing and basically chokes him out against the railing. Again on Wet and Watch, we've then got a wooden pallet comes into the match. So pallet to the face of Cairo, and then frying pan seems to get his way back into Tommy Cairo, and he hits Tommy Dreamer with it without a handle. So we've then got Dreamer getting Cairo with the pallet to the back. We get back into the ring and there's a neck breaker. Tommy Cairo gets back up to the top, again mocking the Sandman, saying that he can't see. And we get the Singapore cane coming back into the match. Dreamer basically just beats down in Cairo at this point. Gets the cane to the skull. It sends him to the outside. And Cairo at this point is just a bloody mess. He gets battered with a cane. Tommy Dreamer then hits him with a crotch shot with a cane. Starts beating down in his head with his open fists. And even at this point for extreme, it then gets a bit further when Tommy Dreamer actually starts tasting the blood off his own fists that's came from Cairo's head. We continue to beat down. The ref then pretty much ends the match with Tommy Cairo unable to continue. Tommy Dreamer then ends up biting Tommy Cairo in the head. Unable to continue, as I say, Tommy Dreamer gets the win. Cairo is really just out cold at this point. The mouth is, the Tommy Dreamer is all splattered and blood off Cairo's head. And we just end in we end with Tommy Dreamer's bloody face and with all the titles to the start of the show, Bob.
I have to say though, with having watched a lot of the Cairo stuff from earlier this year, like that feud with Sandman, with what you might end up calling kind of the original Singapore Kane feud, if you like, Cairo always felt to me like a bit of a lame duck as a babyface.
Yeah.
I think he, in the first 15 seconds of this segment coming out, he felt more relevant than he did in the entirety of the last year. In terms of coming out as a heel, mocking Sandman, pretending he's blind, you know, putting the cane up to his eye like he just lost his sight. I thought that was phenomenal. And as for the match itself, I mean, you kind of summed it up pretty well, and it was just kind of a walking ringside brawl. They were doing the thing with the fan interaction, with kind of bring your own weapons. And it wasn't a match to write home about in a sense of kind of a great brawl, but it was very watchable. And I think did a lot for both characters.
Yeah, but even going back to last month, Bob, with that kind of satellite segment with Joey Styles backstage, Cairo is just a totally different entity when he's there as a bad guy. As you say, he just wasn't standing out as a babyface in that first feud with the Singapore Kane. And as you say, with this match, with the promos that he's been doing, even just the general mocking of Sandman, he's just absolutely leveling in the role.
Yeah, no, completely. Let's move on to the Dreamer Sandman segment. We pretty much summed it up in the news, so I won't particularly go over it again. But long story short, Sandman came out, you know, sunglasses or the kind of blind man glasses on. He had bandages all over his eyes, and this was going to be his kind of retirement speech. Miss Peaches comes out, kisses him, says it could all be different. Woman comes out, lays out Miss Peaches, and then as Woman says, right, I'm going to unveil my new guy, out comes Tommy Dreamer. Dreamer and Woman get into a bit of an argument, and Sandman, who's in the corner, takes off his sunglasses, whips off his bandages, nails Dreamer over the back of the head with a Singapore cane, and that is the resolution. Dal, I thought this was fantastic.
It's an industry where we see a lot of turns and a lot of swerves, Bob. This is honestly, I mean, we see it every single month, but if people haven't seen this play out on TV, it really is worth going back to watch it. For me, it's the best turn I've ever seen. It really was amazing stuff.
Yeah, a really effective segment, and it does seem to be, to fill in a bit of the story, it does seem to be that the idea that Dreamer and Woman were, in theory, in cahoots, although Woman was clearly leading him on. But that seems to be the idea. I think they did tease a bit, I think it was at the end of October, with kind of Woman coming out to ringside for a Dreamer match and kind of setting up the idea that they might be together. Mm-hmm. A really effective segment, and then we've got, you know, the great Dreamer promo that you heard at the top of this bit as well. This whole thing's really good. It continues to be the best thing they've got going, and that's not to say there aren't other really good things on this show, but the max quality for this feud isn't going to be there, but they're more than making up for it with these kind of segments.
That's it. We've said it before, Bob, but it's more about an experience with ECW and the full situation with the first match with the Kane. We've then got the I Quit match last month. We've got this full Sandman retirement ceremony. It's every month. It's TV gold.
Completely.
ECW Odd Couple here, Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck, having a little family problem. Because you see, my partner is going to be incapacitated November 19th when ECW rules and legislation say that we deserve a rematch with the public enemy. Now, my partner's taking it upon himself to find me a new partner, but I'm saying, Mikey, if I can't team with you, I'm not teaming with anybody, and I'm asking ECW for a singles match November 19th.
No, you're not, Cactus.
Mikey, I'm going after a singles match November 19th.
Cactus, my mom told me I cannot come home until the public enemy are out of wrestling. And I made a phone call, and I don't have very much money, but I made the phone call, and he said he'll team with you, and you're going to team with him.
But, Mikey, I can't trust him in the most hostile city in the world, November 19th. It's likely to become a 3-on-1 situation.
Cactus, if he turns you on you, I will kick his ass. You're going to do it. You are going to do it, damn it.
Mikey, are you sure?
I'm sure. You're going to do it.
All right. My partner, November 19th.
Tell him.
It's Kevin Sullivan. Big Bang.
Alright, now we're moving on to the tag team title change. Del hasn't seen this match other than the brief highlights, so we'll come to you at the end, Del, but we will start with the match review. Match was called between the Public Enemy and Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck for the ECW tag titles. Match was called Brawl Game, the idea being that a baseball bat or bats would become legal after one member of a side couldn't answer a 10 count. So the Tornado tag team format with a unique move where Cactus Jack picked up a drowsy Mikey Whipwreck and threw him across the ring, taking out both members of the Public Enemy. Rock then kicked Jack in the nuts and Grunge clotheslined him to the outside. Rocco Rock climbed to the top and hit a drive-by, which is a rolling senton. Mikey was down for the count, but Cactus came back in and hit both members of the Public Enemy with a chair before hitting a double underhook DDT to Grunge onto a chair, and Whipwreck barely answered the 10 count. Jack then hit a double DDT on both members of the Public Enemy, who couldn't almost didn't answer the count. Grunge then got up and threw a handful of powder into the eyes of Cactus Jack, regaining the advantage and briefly blinding Jack. Whipwreck rallied for the delight of the crowd, but was thrown into Jack by Rocco Rock. Jack, not being able to see, then hit Mikey with a DDT, and Whipwreck was down for the 10 count. Then the baseball cats became legal as the Public Enemy began laying waste to their opponents as the match spilt into the aisleway and then up towards the camera position. Rocco Rock set up two tables near the camera area, one on top of another, before laying Mikey on top. He then climbed onto a ledge to set up to do another rolling senton, but Sabu emerged from behind kind of a door on the ledge and confronted him with 9-1-1 and Paulie Dangerously by his side. Sabu pushed Rocco Rock off the ledge through the top of the two tables as Mikey had moved. Mikey then hit Rocco Rock with a chair, making him fall through the second table. Grunge and Jack then reappeared in the same area by the tables. Jack suplexed Rocco Rock onto another table, then jumped off another ledge before doing one of the best spots of the year, a running elbow drop off the ledge through a table with Rocco Rock laying on top of it about 10 feet below. The action then returned to the ring, where Grunge jumped from the top with a baseball bat, wiping out Mikey Whipwreck and winning the tag titles. Del, I know, you've seen highlights of this match, I think. From what you saw, what do you think?
It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal, Bob. We'd already seen the stuff with Dreamer and Sandman earlier on. These four over the last couple of months with Cactus kind of dragging Mikey out with the year into this feud. We'd seen a brief match earlier in the month with the Public Enemy introducing the concept of this brawl game situation. And then as soon as we knew that we were going to see Cactus Jack in it as well, it's just, where can we go now? And they really delivered on it.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. It is the only real, the best way I can describe it. I mean, it was a bit, kind of hit and miss early on. I mean, it was kind of, it was kind of a brawl, but it, once they got to by the camera position and we got the bit with Sabu coming out and pushing Rocco Rock off kind of through the table, and we'll cover that part of the story in the TV review. We'll explain why that's relevant. That spot with Cactus Jack, my word.
He's been doing this flying elbow. We've seen it back in WCW, Bob, and we thought they were maybe trying to neuter him a wee bit. We stopped him doing it, and that was going for a ring apron to a protective mat. Now we're seeing him doing it for the, pretty much just at the back of the Eagle's Nest, as far as I'm aware, up at the back of Joey Styles, down onto the arena floor with no protective mats, with tables there. It's just frightening stuff to experience, but you can't take your eyes from it.
No, I mean, look, I mean, if Cactus Jack wants to kill himself on a monthly basis, then, you know, he can be our guest and all the better for our entertainment. I'd rather he didn't. But if that's his MO, then good luck to him, because this is great.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably not good for his hips or his arse or his back or anything like that. But a phenomenal thing. And the tag titles, I think, are back where they belong, really.
Well,
there's only so much you can do with the, you know, Jack and Whipwreck as a team. And I think the Public Enemy are the best tag team going in ECW. And they, even without the belts, they kept being featured prominently. And if you're going to move them into a feud with Sabu and Taz, as we're going to come to, then it was only natural that that was where they were going to go.
Exactly. I mean, we're talking November now, Bob. We've kind of discussed it off air. We're kind of talking about our votes for the end of the year awards. I challenge anybody to pick out any federation and any tag team or superstar that's had a stronger end of the year than the Enemy. It's brilliant seeing them getting those belts back, but as you say, it's kind of testament to them as a team that you didn't really need it on them. They were still getting the promo time. We've seen the funny side of the two of them through the year. We've now seen the more serious side of them. And it's, they really are just great TV to watch. And as I say, the end of the year that they're having, it's as strong as you'll see anywhere in the country.
We might have an argument where the Nasty Boys are concerned regarding Tag Team of the Year, but we'll cover that next month with our end of year review. But yeah, this was great. And they had another really good match on the November 1st show, which you don't really have time to cover. It was November 1st show, which we'll cover in a second with the TV review, was just kind of a recap show, but they had a big long match with the Bad Breed, which was great as well. And again, as we'll cover in the TV show, a TV review rather, they're going to be moving into a feud with the Tasmaniac and Sabu.
Oh no, Johnny. We're not here because we gotta be here. We're here because this is where we wanna be. We're back, baby. We got our money. We got our crib. We got our hoes.
And most of all, we got them ECW tag team belts.
And let me tell you something. We're back to where we belong. We're back when we're gonna face Tasmaniac Sabu. We know where we have to beat you. We smell it. We smell the blood in the air.
Look how beautiful it is.
Where people can taste it and like it.
Because you know, Sabu, Tasmaniac, it's not no other reason. It's a matter of survival. And we survived on the streets all our lives. And we're back here because we know, come the 17th, holiday hell, we're surviving. So I'm going to reach down your throats. And I'm going to rip your hearts out. And I'm going to eat them before your carcasses hit the ground. Rock-a-bye, baby.
Del, TV review.
TV review, Bob, as you say, November 1st, pretty much a build-up show, but as we did mention, it did introduce that brawl game concept with the Public Enemy and Ian and Axel Rotten, the Bad Breed, with kind of similar levels of brutality to the match you just ran through for us there. Moving on to November the 8th, it was really a big focus on Dreamer and Cairo and Dreamer and the Sandman segments, which we've just covered earlier on as well. Shane Douglas cut a promo at the end of the show on the stage area, interviewed by Joey Styles, and it's setting up for a match with Two Cold Scorpio again, but also a returning Ron Simmons. That had been previewed earlier in the evening. Douglas at this point then announced that he would be managed in the match by his former manager, Sensuous Sherry, and that Steve Austin would be his tag team partner, as we touched on in the news. November the 15th started with a tag title change, as we reviewed earlier, with the Public Enemy. We then had the focus on Sabu with an interview segment with Paul E. Dangerously, another solid promo from Paul E. as per. They focused on the altercation with the Public Enemy, Rocco Rock and Sabu, and Dangerously then accused Rocco Rock of stealing Sabu's gimmick with the flip dives and the rolling sentons through the table. Styles asked about Sabu's participation in the 19th taping. Dangerously said no, it won't be there, it'll be at home watching WCW Saturday night. Styles was referencing Sabu being spiked directly in his neck by Chris Benoit, which they showed more than once in slow motion, and it was feared previously that Sabu was seriously injured and the match was immediately stopped, but Sabu does appear to be okay, and he did work the 19th tapings. Heyman later said that WCW and WWF would be afraid to put Sabu on or Taz on their TV, and you can understand why.
Moving on to November the 22nd, we open with Chad Austin cutting a promo inviting people to go and see a Smoky Mountain wrestling show nearby. Austin was involved in a tag match, but even his tag team partner turned on him as he was beaten down in a 3-on-1 attack. Jason lost his TV title belt after Todd Gordon ordered a shoot of Dean Malenko along with Jason's pitbulls to leave ringside. They would all eventually return after a ref bump, but Two Cold Scorpio were still able to get the job done and win the TV title. After the match, a promo aired with Jason vowing that Malenko would get the TV title back next week. Shane Douglas pinned Jim Powers to retain the ECW world title, and after the match he said that Powers was one hell of a man, unlike Ric Flair. The main event was a tag team match between the Malenko brothers, Dean and Joe, against Sabu and the Tasmaniac. The match ended with Sabu clothesline Dean from the top rope off Taz's shoulders. The post-match saw Jason run out and hit Paul E, followed by the Pitbulls. Then the Public Enemy appeared and attacked Sabu. The Malenkos kept Taz quiet, allowing the Public Enemy to beat down on Sabu and Paul E dangerously. Rocco Rock then moonsaulted Paul E dangerously through the table, and the show ended with Dangerously being stretchered off. November 29th saw Dean Malenko defeat Too Cold Scorpio to win the TV title belt after Scorpio missed the moonsault and Malenko hit a neckbreaker for the victory. This was a very strong technical wrestling match. We also had Chan Austin coming out again to big up Smoky Mountain Wrestling. This time world champion Shane Douglas showed up and beat him up. Della, I want to make a point of the Douglas stuff. Because I probably should kind of frame what I'm about to say by kind of reiterating what I said before when we're discussing ECW, which is this is a promotion that is live event first, TV second, in that, you know, if you want the flip side of that, it's almost kind of like WCW, where they're kind of TV versus live event second.
Yep.
In the sense that everything ECW does is kind of geared towards their live event stuff, because that's what draws the crowds and that's what makes them their money. All well and good. Douglas, in terms of the live events, he's headlining a lot of shows. He's getting a lot of the big names. He's faced Benoit, he's faced Ron Simmons, he's faced Sabu, he had Funk earlier this year, all that stuff. Douglas, in terms of a live event guy, is being featured a lot in a lot of big name matches. He was going to team with Sonny Steve Austin at the 19th show, but they had to change plans with that because Austin was injured. But he still got to team with Brian Pillman, and Century Sherry did come back. All well and good. But from a TV perspective, they haven't done a lot with Douglas in a while.
Yeah.
In the sense that, and I think I can best sum up this whole thing by saying that since Terry Funk, that feud ended probably, he won the title off him in April, so about May, June time. Funk's best feud in ECW has probably been with Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree with you, Bob. As I say, it's, if you look at Shane Douglas on ECW TV, if you're not in the vicinity to go to these live events, if you see him on TV and you took that belt from him, you wouldn't know he's a world champion. It's really been, we've kind of spoke about the franchise side of Shane Douglas as well in the last couple of months, and it is more than a name. This is somebody that you could easily build, certainly this company around, but even one of the nationals, you could easily see him being up there challenging. And for a TV standpoint, we've seen amazing stuff this month again with Cairo and Dreamer, with Dreamer and Sandman. We've seen the tag title stuff. Shane Douglas has just been an afterthought, and you're seeing some of the names that he's going in with now with Bad Chad Austin. It's kind of worrying and where they're going to be going with him in the next wee while.
What's he going out there and beating up Chad Austin for? That's 911's job, isn't it? I mean, they did a bit at the beginning of the month, which was quite funny, kind of mocking on like WWF and WCW, where they had a guy playing the national anthem on the electric guitar, like playing it badly, mocking how that, you know, the national anthems on the WWF and WCW pay-per-views always screw up somewhere along the line. 911 comes out and beats him up. That's quite funny. But
that's
your world champion shouldn't be coming out at the end of November 29th to have a go at Chad Austin, who's not really much of anything. Not to say he isn't, but in terms of how he's presented, he's just kind of a low-card guy. Your world champion shouldn't care that he's going out there and, you know, saying about Smoky Mountain Wrestling, that shouldn't be his spot. And then he faced Jim Powers in a match, which, you know, who's Jim Powers? They didn't, you know, and that's not to say Jim Powers isn't a name, but they haven't presented him as a name. And then we have a match with him and Ron Simmons, which they didn't even show. They just showed the post-match and set up for the tag match. And again, it's not to say that it's a bad business move, in the sense that, you know, Douglas is being featured quite heavily at the live events, and he is the world champion, he is main event. But to watch on TV, he's just cutting great promos about Ric Flair, and just cutting great, you know, they did a gimmick on one of the shows where they said ring the ECW 900 line and hear Shane Douglas's weekly state of the industry address. Well, it's all, we see that on TV every week.
Yeah,
that's all he comes on and does. We played one of the promos last month where he's comparing, you know, the ECW with WCW and WWF. He's doing great with what he's being given, but the question is that he's your world champion, and yet I can list 7 or 8 guys who are being featured more prominently on TV.
That's the issue that ECW has had, Bob. We've really noticed this since the the NWA title to them in late August with this influx of talent coming in. There's a lot of guys in this show doing a lot of good stuff. Whether it's a case of that is the kind of damage that they're doing to themselves with having that focus on the live events and the TV as a bit of an afterthought, you're seeing a lot of, it's what the ECW basically do is they have their live shows every month and you basically get the highlights rolled out week by week. And it gives you good matches. There's strong feuds in there, but they do need to have that focus on the world champion. He is the franchise. He is the world champion for a reason. And obviously we want to see him having the strong feuds and having the strong matches to build him up. Cause this is a guy that realistically we've both said it could easily be a big, big player in the next year. But at the way that it's going at the minute, it's got to be a bit doubtful.
I suppose there's the other way of looking at this, which is one that from a live event perspective, Douglas is the guy headlining a lot of the shows, not all of them by any stretch, because he doesn't appear on every show, but he appears on most. And I suppose there's the thought process of, well, we don't really have anyone in our, what I would call kind of full-time regular roster, because they got kind of, and also like none of them are like under contract or anything like that, but they've got kind of guys who you know are going to be there, who kind of live locally and that kind of thing, and then they've got the guys who they bring in. And I think in a lot of cases, the best name they can bring in, they put with Douglas. And it's very difficult to kind of rely on getting them on TV for months on end, getting them ready for Douglas because they're not going to be there. And it's like, well, if Ron Simmons is available, if I'm Ron Simmons, I want to face Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense. And so I guess there's that. And I guess there's also the other thing. Well, by and large, none of the other guys we've got are ready. Like Tasmaniac's not ready. You know, let's put the Public Enemy up. They did the thing with Cactus Jack. They've done Sabu. Sandman's not ready. Dreamer's not ready. A lot of the other guys they haven't got aren't ready. So I guess there is that, but I think they need to do a bit more just with giving him, you know, you look at the great programs. He's not in a great program and he hasn't been since the Terry Funk feud ended about 5 or 6 months ago. And again, it's looking at it from a TV angle where they're looking at it from a different angle. So there is a very good counter argument to this, but I just think they could be doing more.
Yeah. I mean, they've got the tools there, Bob. As you say, there's guys that are up and comers. There's your Malenkos, your Benoits, your Tasmaniacs. But as you say, they're not at that stage where you could realistically put them into that feud with the world champion. There's kind of like Cactus and Sabu would be your obvious kind of challengers, but obviously they're tied up at the minute. We've got Too Cold that was at the NWA title tournament in the final, but now he's your TV champion.
I think the answer to those last three names is that they've done a lot of those matches at live events. They've done Jack, they've done Sabu, and they've done Too Cold.
Exactly, it's something we've seen in the last couple of months. I mean, I think maybe the best bet at the minute would be, is it a case where they can get Terry Funk back in? Or we've maybe got the likes of 911 is untied at the minute. There's definitely options there. It's just whether they choose to do it for that TV audience, because it is obviously a big part of the business for them.
Let's discuss the Public Enemy, Sabu, Taz angle. We'll start with kind of the whole kind of Sabu and Rocco Rock storyline. I quite like that. The whole thing where, and it's weird, like one thing I noticed, I think particularly with that few more than any, I suppose there's a clear baby face and hit, well, I don't know actually, well, no, we'll come to that in a bit. Like, a lot of these storylines, there's no real clear baby face or heel, it's more kind of, we're just going to present a story and you can kind of pick sides.
Yeah, we're going to put four guys in there, pick who you like, pick who you don't, we'll take it for there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of Cactus Jack and Michael Whitbeck are very, very much baby faces, but there's no obvious baby face side in the Public Enemy Sabu Taz feud. And in the Dreamer and Sandman one, the one thing we didn't really get to was that when Sandman kind of whipped off his, kind of glasses and his bandages, the crowd popped hugely. Now, in part, that was just because of the surprise, but Sandman came across kind of like a baby face. And Dreamer, kind of like, you know, the gullible kind of, you know, the guy who fell for the trap. Now, again, I think the promos they aired that followed that probably did a fair amount to reverse that process. But it is quite possible to imagine that, you know, in this company where it's not so the lines between face and heel isn't particularly well defined. It's just that they don't particularly, they just present roles and just say, you know, you pick your side. We're going to present two kind of side of things. It will be interesting to see how that ironed out, whether they just look at Sabu as kind of the cool guy, you know, the anti-establishment guy who's smoking, who's got the hot valet and all that. So that's like that. But I like the idea of, like, you know, you compare off Rocco Rock and Sabu, if you like. Is Sabu and, Is Sabu the kind of character that would have a tag team partner?
Well, they did touch on, I think we were going back to maybe June, July time, they touched on the kind of kinship with the Tasmaniac and Sabu. I think it was Sabu coming out to, was it Tasmaniac coming out to make a save after Sabu had been beat down? I mean, you don't really see him as somebody that's going to be going home after the show and kind of phoning up the Tasmaniac saying, how you doing? You can't picture that with either of these two guys. They're kind of unique entities in the business.
Well, that is a series of vignettes waiting to be made.
Exactly. Taz and Sabu coming to a town near you, a wee kind of sitcom, get a pilot for that. But I mean, it's something that we've not seen, which is always a good thing. I mean, the suplexes that Tasmaniac can do is as good as you're going to see in the business. And this is a company that's got Chris Benoit in it as well. So that's
Generally Benoit can do good suplexes. I mean, he did nearly kill Sabu at one point during this match.
Well, yeah, right in the head. But they are unique guys. I mean, it is going to be an interesting feud. We've obviously seen the Cactus and Mikey stuff with Rocco and Grunge. So having these two going against them, I think it's different and I think it's interesting.
What did you think of the post-match of the Malenko's match with you? It's a bit kind of difficult to follow, and I hope I kind of explained it well enough in the TV report, because the Pitbulls came out and then just, like, didn't really feature. But we kind of had the Malenko's kind of, you know, keeping Taz quiet, and so the Public Enemy beat down on Sabu, and then Rocco Rock does the senton to Paulie dangerously through the table. Again, kind of one of those segments where really good, and, you know, you've got kind of the heel Public Enemy team, like, doing the senton to Paulie dangerously, the heel manager and all that. But a really effective segment, and that's a match I really want to see.
That's it. I mean, it was one of those, we've just looked at the Survivor Series in part one of this show, Bob, and it's one of those situations where you can then build feuds and kind of get new angles coming out. A multi-man set up like that, this was kind of similar in the case. It was absolute bedlam. You'd Taz and Sabu and the Malenko's in there. You've then got Jason coming in to go for Taz. 911 gets Taz. The Public Enemy then comes out and, come out and take 911 away. You've got the Enemy there that then Spike Pile Driver Sabu. Paulie's in with the phone. He gets put through the table. They've then got Rocco doing the moonsault went to him. It was just bedlam, and it's kind of seeing all those guys in the ring. There's so many ways that they can go with that. It might just be a case that we've got the Public Enemy and Sabu Taz in the next month or so, and then we move on. We've got the likes of the 911 getting involved, the Pitbulls. There's a lot of ways they can go with us.
Thoughts on Dean Malenko versus Too Cold Scorpio?
We spoke about it earlier on, Bob, the kind of potential challengers, maybe a couple of months, maybe even next year down the line with Shane Douglas. These are two solid, solid guys. It's been as much fun for me watching this title reign with Jason as we harked back to last month when I'm sitting in the Palace of Sin. It's been brilliant stuff to watch it for a TV point of view. But having the Malenko Scorpio match, it really just brought a bit of prestige back to that title. These are two solid wrestlers. And it's hopefully something that we can maybe get a feud out of in the next month or so, and it's not just a one and done, but we'll see where they go.
Just a quick sidebar before I come back to that. On the kind of the potential opponents of Douglas front, isn't the next great feud for Shane Douglas the guy that can go toe to toe with him on the mic? Like, what wasn't the last one that great feud with Terry Funk? I mean, there was the, as I said, we weren't playing audio back at the time on the show, but there was the great kind of press conference back, I think it would have been February, I think. Well, that might have been January, one of the two, after the, one of the 60 minute time limit draws.
Yeah.
That great kind of press conference promo segment with Douglas and Funk dueling. And it isn't the issue that within reason, I think we've seen enough from Malenko and certainly from Too Cold Scorpio that they can't do that. And the next big Shane Douglas feud is the guy they can get in for a few months, that can go toe to toe with him.
Match him with the mouth, yeah.
So I don't know who that is, but obviously we'll come to that. But yeah, I mean, it was a very good technical match. It's not the kind of wrestling that's gonna, you know, put my butt in a seat by any stretch, but it's the kind of match I think a lot of people will enjoy. A lot of scientific stuff early on. And I like the fact that they kept, you know, we had the stuff with all the interference the previous week when Too Cold Scorpio beat Jason. And then this one was just a straight up match really. And it was a clean finish. Scorpio missed the moonsault and Malenko took advantage. A really good TV match. And the kind of match we've come to expect. But boy, Del, what a month. I mean, I was putting together this kind of, this run through earlier for this part of the show. And just like, this TV review is massive. Like, there's stuff happening like every 5 minutes, and that's kind of in a good way. And I say it again for kind of the third month in a row, another great month of ECW TV.
Exactly. Month on month, we're saying the same stuff, Bob. It really is the promotion to watch at the minute. I mean, we've just spoke briefly there about Malenko and Scorpio in a technical match. You then get the brawls with Cairo and Sandman, Cairo and Dreamer, sorry. The Sandman reveal is as good a good angle as you're going to see in TV. We've got the tag matches, the tag titles changing hands, and we've still got Shane Douglas there as well as your world champion. I mean, you're not going to see as good a variety and as good a delivery of product no matter where you look at the minute.
Absolutely not. Now, another great month or so. I think we've got Public Enemy and the Sabotage match that will come up, well, it's the end of December, but importantly, I don't think any of the 19th stuff yet has aired on TV, so I think that's going to be kind of the TV certainly for the early part of December. Shame we didn't get to see Stunning Steve Austin, or we won't. It's going to be not that Brian Pillman's a bad replacement, but if they could get hold of Austin for a few months, that's the feud for Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
But no, that'll be interesting. As I said, there were a lot of WCW guys coming in after, it's a nice segue, after the ECW and WCW legal kind of lawsuit, well, it wasn't really a lawsuit, it was kind of resolution in the end, because WCW kind of took the name When Worlds Collide. And they took the name When Worlds Collide for the show that you're about to review with Chris Lacey. I'm going to take a back seat now. We're going to hear a Ron Simmons promo from ECW, just because I like to bridge segments and we didn't have any promos in the AAA part. And then when we come back, Del, you're going to be in my seat.
Back after that, but it looks a wee bit, Bob.
Chris Lacey's going to join you, and you're going to review in AAA. And then after that, Del's not going to be back. Del's going to leave, and it's going to be me back. And we're going to be looking at the Clash of the Champions.
Here, talk about accolades. Let me tell you something, punk. You don't know what it is to be a fighter. You were trained to be one. I was born one. I came into the world to fight, raised without any parents. I'm the fighter. I know what it is to fight. I didn't have to be trained to be a fighter. I'm the kind of man they send on missions because a punk like you don't have the guts. You know what accolades is? I'll tell you what they are. Florida champion, Florida tag team champion, United States champion, first black man to be the world's heavyweight champion. They said that couldn't be done. They told Jackie Robinson the same thing. But guess what? It happened. And guess what? It's going to happen again. You see, it's like this. Ron Simmons don't come out here and just run his mouth. You know what it's done to talking for him all of his life? It's been these. It's been these. On the streets, in the ring. I am a living legend right now as a young wrestler in the ring. I don't have to wait until I retire. I have already had the accolades behind me. You want to be where I've been, boy. You get out here preaching about you know what it is to be a franchise. Franchise is carrying a major college team to two Orange Bowls, millions of dollars, single-handedly. I did that. Franchise. Hey, Heisman Trophy as a defensive lineman. Three-time All-American. Freshman All-American. Seventh sack, Sports Illustrated Player of the Week. Stop me.
Oh, hold down. So, Shay, you see what you got to deal with. Stunning Steve, you don't even have the slightest idea. This is where wrestling is wrestling. Straight to the extreme. Ain't no shaking.
You talking
ain't
about
no faking.
Something being granite, stone and granite, it'll be on your headstone, boy, on your grave.
I tell you what, come November 19th in the ECW arena.
Stunning Steve Austin.
Straight to the extreme.
Steve know what it is. Steve's been in the ring with me. Hey, bring the A-team. Bring them all. It don't make no difference to me. War is Ron Simmons, okay?
War.
I am war. Bring it on.
And I am too cold, and we here to do what?
Bring it on.
Hola, la bienvenida a nuestra revisión de licencia asistencia asesoría y administración pago por vista. Este espectáculo nos trajo la acción emocionante dinámica y de vuelo alto de México. Viva sus guados. So, something a little bit different for the project this month. Me and Chris Lacey, Del Muir and Chris Lacey reviewing the recent WCW produced pay-per-view When Worlds Collide. This show for Los Angeles highlighted the stars of AAA, showing Mexican lucha libre style of wrestling. Basically, it's WCW's idea of creating an interest in the South American product to a North American audience. Is it going to work? We'll soon see. Chris, how are we doing?
Fantastic. Good. And enjoying lots of lucha libre.
Lucha libre, we've got some burritos, got a couple of bottles of Corona. It's going to be a good show, Chris.
I've even got the tequila here for the big guns.
Brilliant. So, Lucha, what do you think? Have you seen much before?
I've seen a little bit of Lucha. I remember seeing one night trying to tape WCW Worldwide on ITV at silly o'clock in the morning, and it not being WCW, it being this foreign wrestling with two referees and lots of people in masks and not really knowing what was going on.
Well, I'm sure we'll probably have plenty of that in this show as well. We'll try and explain it for everybody listening, but bear with us.
Which later I found out was Mexican wrestling.
Oh.
So, you know, it was one of those where I had no idea really of when I saw it, what was going on, but I was like, it's fast, I like this, but never thought I would ever see a full show.
Yeah, well, here we go. We're now breaking that barrier then for everybody, and I'm glad that we're both coming into it with seemingly as much blindness as each other, so we'll see how we go on. So, boys and girls, we start Lucha Libre. We start in the ring with Arturo Romero, the voice of AAA. We're introduced to, thankfully, the English language commentary team of Chris Cruz and Mike Tenay. These two guys might not be common as a calling team, but we'll discuss their impact later in the show. First match of the night is a mainstay in Mexican wrestling. It's a minis match. You'll notice we say minis and not midgets, as one of the guys in it seems to be at least 5'3" or 5'4", but we'll plough on regardless. For anybody that's seen the Survivor Series this month with a midget match, including Jerry Lawler and Doink the Clown, might be a bit different to what you're maybe expecting, as these guys really can work. So first up, we've got Mascarita Sagrada and Octagoncito. They're going up against Espetrito and Territo Estrada. The four minis are basically scale models, the other AAA stars that we'll see full size later on. Before we start, a few real changes that we're kind of used to in the American side of wrestling, so we'll go over these at the minute. Tag team matches. As per, there's only two fighters allowed in the ring, but they do not need to be physically tagged. So as one is on the outside, another can enter without tagging his partner. As Chris alluded to at the start, we've also got two referees, one technical, one rudo, or one goody, one baddie. So it is. So as Chris says, fast start to the night, setting the pace for the whole night. Lucha Libre really doesn't catch a breath at any point, so we'll try and fire through this as quick as we did on the show. Sagrada enters the ring to hit a lovely springboard arm drag before beating the Rudo start beating him down in the corner. There's a spike scoop slam to Sagrada as Octagoncito come back into the play. Espetrico goes to the top but crotches himself in the top rope. Octagoncito then gets the better of Estrada and throws him to the outside as Mascarita comes back in. Lovely springboard hurricanrana as the technicals gather pace, and there's an acai moonsault to the outside from Sagrada. Octagoncito dives over the top rope before Estrada gets the Rudos back into control. And at 8.5 minutes, we've got Mascarita Sagrada getting a springboard moonsault on Espetrico and gets the win. Chris, thoughts on the first match?
I really liked the action. Some amazing high flying, and I love the style.
Yeah.
I just have a little thing. I'm not sure about midgets wrestling. That's my little thing.
Yeah.
See, watching them wrestle, I can see that they are good at their craft and what they do. A little bit of me just thinks it's a little bit exploitive and a little bit sort of, look, they're midgets.
Well, that's that. And I mean, you even see it called, you never really see it advertised as anything else but midget wrestling. It is a kind of where, even in the PC world that we're in at the minute in 1994, these guys make money off the name midget. And I mean, there is a bit of an element to the, almost like a Victorian freak show element to it, where it's like, I get these wee guys in the ring, we'll all just sit back, drink Coronas and have a good laugh at them. But, I mean, if you look at it up at kind of an American audience, as we've seen at the Survivor Series in part one of the show, the differences in the South America and North America with regards to midgets, they are giving these guys their shot. And as you say, I thought it was really impressive.
See, that's the thing. I like what they're doing. I like how they wrestle and the fact that they are really good at what they do. But it's when you see, because obviously we're more used to seeing them how they're with Dink and all yeah. that in the WWF style, which that's what gives me a sour taste of it being, look, let's point and look at the midgets. Let's make yeah. them the freak show. Well, that's yes, these guys work, but I'm still just a little bit on the concept as a whole.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. Maybe we don't want it to be exploitative, but as I say, good start to the night. Moving on, we've got another six-man tag. It's Huerta Guerrera and Psicosis with Madonna's boyfriend, or Luis Piccoli, to give him his real name. They're going up against Rey Mysterio Jr., Heavy Metal, and the Latin Lover. The three technicals of this match are all under 25, and they're going up against the Rudos, who form Los Gringo Locos. It's basically a Mexican equivalent of the Four Horsemen. Psicosis is it's pretty much a kind of Mexican Jushin Liger, and even down to the ring attire, you can see he's heavily inspired with the Japanese legend. Mysterio Jr. is the youngest on the card tonight at 19 years old. And between Mysterio Jr. and Psicosis, we could easily be looking at these two guys in the next couple of years as they maybe make their way onto an Americanized product. They've definitely got the skill set at this young age. Guerrera and Heavy Metal are team captains in this match, which brings us on to another Lucha Law and Relevos Australianos, or Australian rules matches. Basically, to win the match, a team must either pin the captain and it's a one-fall match, or if they don't pin the captain, they have to pin both other team members. What do you make of these rules, Cass?
They're confusing, because the first one in the first match, obviously, was the diving out of the ring. Then the next one can come in with no tags.
Yeah.
That's fine. That makes sense. This one is a little bit confusing, because what happens if you pinned one of the non-captains?
Yeah.
And then someone pinned the captain, obviously, uneven, but they'd win. It's like, I suppose if that's the norm, it would be fine. You'd get used to it, but it seems a little bit random and a bit confusing.
Well, we've got a lot more of that to look forward to, folks, as I'm sure you'll be. Well, can I try and take that onus on as they try and explain that? So again, quick start to the match, even before the introductions, we're into a bit of a brawl. Mysterio Jr. gets a lot of time earlier on showing the high-flying style before Latin Lover, the biggest of the night at 6'1", enters. Him and Spicoli show kind of pretty limited lucha ability and seem to be more suited to American style. But then Heavy and Psicosis pick up the pace before Ray and Fuerza Guerrera battle it out. Spicoli hits a lovely double underhook suplex on the outside, then launches Mysterio Jr. into the crowd on the outside. As Ray gets back to ringside, he's suplexed onto the protective mats. And then back in the ring, Heavy Metal and Psicosis have a great battle, and there's a lovely spot, kind of rivals the spot for Bob earlier on with the ECW Cactus's flying elbow for the Eagle's Nest. It's a lovely spot here with Heavy Metal running the ropes. Just as he's running to the ropes, jumps up, kicks off them horizontally, and then somersaults back over Psicosis. Fuerza Guerrera enters the ring, grabs Heavy Metal and puts him into a submission hold. The technical captain then taps, and as he's the captain, the Rudos get the win. Just touching on what Chris had said earlier on about the kind of confusing rules in the situation for a first time viewer, even the commentary gets picked up on at this point with Mike Tenay being a bit unsure of the finish, but they do cover it well with Chris Cruz covering them. They kind of explain the finish to the English speaking audience. Chris, I'd have preferred a Psicosis Heavy Metal Mysterio Junior triple threat here. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I was massively impressed with Psicosis and Mysterio as two of the definite ones. Madonna's boyfriend seemed a little bit out of place.
Yep.
in the whole of the show. If you take the show as a whole, he seems really out of place for yep. Lucha. But yeah, I could see if you'd have had them three in a triple threat match, it could have been really good sort of.
Yeah, it's definitely. Yeah, I mean, the card is definitely stacked. I mean, we're only on match two of the night, but this is a, This is basically a five match card, and it's really, really heavy on tag matches. But I mean, as I said, the guys in it are definitely talented. I think it could maybe just maybe benefited from a bit kind of calmed down with the tag matches and getting maybe, as I say, a triple threat, and they would have broke it up after the midget match at start and then get on to the other six man next. But it's definitely definitely some talent in there. And as we say, Psicosis and Mysterio Jr., I think this is definitely going to be a couple of names that we'll be hearing in the next few years. Chris, would you make you the commentator so far and kind of try to explain all these rules? Obviously we've got this captain's rule, the tag rule. I think outside the ring there's a 20 count as opposed to a 10. We've got the two refs. It's a lot to take in. How do you think they explained it?
They've been really good with sort of laying out what to expect mm-hmm. in the rules and when things are coming up. But just to like that last match, obviously with the ending as it was, it didn't help when I think that there yeah. wasn't a focus on it in the ring. You know how in American wrestling or even in European style, they would make sure that the finish was caught in the center of the camera. So you know that it's significant. Whereas how the last match ended, it did leave a little bit of confusion of have they got to go and eliminate someone else? Because it wasn't center. If you understand what I mean,
you've got that captain's rule there. It's not directly on camera. You've got Mike Tenay even a bit confused at the end with the finish. As I say, they did do a really good job throughout the night, especially when this is, with it being a North American audience, there are a lot of people obviously going to be tuning into this for the first time. They did do a good job explaining, as you say, it was just that end that was really confusing, not assisted by the kind of directing of the cameras and then that commentary at the end. But this is still a decent bout. Next match, we're on to a cross promotional match where a team from AAA going up against a team from the IWC, the International Wrestling Council. Team IWC's actually got three faces that might be well known to American fans, with Chris Benoit fighting as the Pegasus Kid and Too Cold Scorpio. They're going to be teaming up with former WWF superstar Tito Santana. Santana obviously Mexican born, but ironically probably get the least experience of the Lucha style in this match. Benoit, or the Pegasus Kid, and Too Cold Scorpio obviously been doing some really good stuff the last couple of months in ECW, as we've done on the show. So those three are going up against Jerry Estrada, La Parca, and Blue Panther. Too Cold and Panther start off the first grappling style of the night. It's a solid start to the match before La Parca and Pegasus Kid match the European style set out. La Parca plays up to the crowd and Chris, what it could possibly be my favourite outfit in the full wrestling. He's basically a jacked up Skeletor from Masters of the Universe. I don't know what you thought of that.
I love the outfit. I love the character.
It's brilliant.
I want that mask. I want both.
Even the mask as well. Mask, yeah.
And I want his ring mask.
I loved that. On the other side of the coin though, we've then got Estrada, Jerry Estrada that comes in. I thought he looked a bit like Brutus Beefcake with its scissors. I don't know about you.
It was just missing a bit of a sort of, you know, the ratty mullet at the back. I thought it was missing. And it could have been Brute I, aka the Butcher as he is at the minute.
Well, the Butcher, our big brother, we talked about that last month, but so we've got Skeletor going against Brutus Beefcake. Should have bought a ticket for this one, folks. So Team AAA, bit of dissension in the ranks as Estrada refuses to tag in La Parca. La Parca then doesn't tag Estrada back in return. The Pegasus Kid and Blue Panther square off. IWC really not liked by the crowd, even after a diving toe pit to the outside for Benoit. The commentators then at this point again clarifying a bit of rules for the audience. Unfortunately, Bobby Bamber's favourite, the over-the-top disqualification rule, unfortunately has no place in Lucha Libre, so that's clarified for the WCW audience.
If you hear what I say about that on Super Brawls, it comes up, but I'm not a massive fan of the over-the-top rule either.
Well, thankfully, it's one rule that we don't need to worry about tonight. We've got enough with 20 counts and two referees and tag rules with it the top as well, so thankfully that's not here. But Too Cold shows his athletic ability on La Parca before Benoit snaps suplexes Blue Panther. These four, easily the easily the strongest in the match. Again, maybe playing a bit with the card. Could maybe even argue a basic 2-on-2 with these four would be preferable, excluding Santana and Estrada. But Benoit misses his top rope headbutt. Scorpio enters, took old in McPhails for the top rope as well. La Parca and Estrada then fight over the pin for Team Triple A, and they almost come to blows at that point. There's a nice spot in the outside where Estrada getting Santana and a full Nelson. La Parca dives through the ropes onto him, but Tito breaks out and the two AAA guys collide. They then lead into a full fist fight on the outside. Tuco takes them out for the top rope with a dive to the outside and back inside the ring. Benoit slams Blue Panther before hitting a leg drop for the top and gets the pin. Team IWC win. Chris, match of the night so far for me?
By a mile. I love the infighting in Team AAA.
Yeah.
Because the storytelling of that to run through the whole match.
The whole match, yeah.
It didn't break, which was just great. I love the fact that Blue Panther was there as well, trying to be peacemaker.
The peacemaker, the mediator in the middle, yeah.
Tito looks really out of place in this match.
It's weird, isn't it? It's just a Mexican-born Tito Santana, but it just did not match up to the athleticism of the other guys, yeah.
Because he is so WWF style in the ring.
Yeah.
Compared to everyone else. It's like a massive, like, what are you doing? You don't, exactly. You shouldn't be here.
I mean, it was definitely one I was looking at. We're having such a big focus in ECW in the show in the last couple of months. The idea to see Scorpio and Benoit and this kind of different style was really appealing to me. And as I say, if it wasn't for that storytelling between the two AAA guys kind of having the bit of dissension in the ranks, as I say, I preferred a basic tag match, but that story was done beautifully. What did you think of Scorpio and Benoit?
They're awesome. And I see big things for both of them. As long as they're given a platform to go on a bigger scale, I can't see either of these two being nothing but world title holders in either of the big two companies. You know, I could probably see them going through an ECW first. Because I think that their style might fit there better than going straight into the land of the giants.
Well, that's it. I mean, they are two kind of smaller guys and having that experience. I mean, we've seen them here in a Lucha show. Benoit, I know, has done a lot of work as Pegasus Kid over in Japan. Two Colts just won the TV title in ECW this month. So, I mean, hopefully we're getting that kind of exposure in a regionalised American product. As you say, hopefully we can get these two guys onto the Nationals and then take it for there. And as you say, world champion certainly doesn't seem too far a reach, I would say.
What I would have liked, though, from this match is maybe I'd have put this, as well as on here for the pay-per-view, but I'd have put it on WCW TV as an exposure to this, to the wider audience, to get them to buy this show. Because obviously, this whole match was everything that was great about Lucha. It was a perfect showcase. Yeah. You know, great storytelling, great moves. You know, this is a match that would get a lot of people interested in Lucha.
Totally agree.
I may have put it on TV for a wider audience.
Exactly, because I mean, they've got that familiar face there with Scorpio, who's worked in WCW. Benoit, as I say, has been making a bit of name for himself in America. That kind of teases the audience. And as I say, it was certainly the match I was most looking forward to before getting into it tonight, just with knowing those faces. And as you say, I think it would be a really smart advertising ploy if you were to get even a highlight of that on a Saturday night or whatever WCW could do with that to get it to a bigger audience. I think that's a really good shout there.
Chop it up and give it like a 5 minute
highlight package, all they need, expose it to that audience, get them into it, and then you don't know how much they could make on the back of that. Totally agree with you. So next up we've got the first of two main events, basically plugged as a double main event show tonight. Cruz and Tanae then plug the three faces of fear before this, so I don't know why you would maybe, kind of, if you were enjoying this, I don't know why you would want to watch the three faces of fear. Alternatively, I don't know if you like the three faces of fear, why would you be watching a a Lucha show, but regardless, another staple of Lucha coming up next. It's a double hair and double mask match with 283 Falls. It's going to be Octagon and El Hijo de Santo up against La Pareja del Terror, which is the Love Machine Art Bar, and Eddie Guerrero. Eddie and Del Santo start. Guerrero goes for a quick pin, and it's another clear step up in technical ability. Love Machine Art Bar and Octagon square off before El Hijo de Santo comes in, and the Love Machine gets him up on his shoulders. Guerrero then climbs the top ropes, and it looks as if they're going to go for a doomsday device, a la the Road Warriors. But Eddie, lovely move, hurricanranas de Santo beautifully for the first fall. So La Pareja del Terror lead the match 1-0. But, as we've said before, this is Lucha Libre. So, in a 283 falls match, both opponents must be pinned to complete the fall. So, we could end up essentially with a 6-9 falls match. What do you think of this, Chris?
I was really confused at this point, because obviously we've just seen that amazing top rope Hurricane Rana doomsday device crossover.
Was there one in any fall? Yeah.
That's it. And I'm also thinking, how is he getting up?
Exactly, and then it moves on. We then get Guerrero getting Octagon after he's got the pinfall on De Santo. He then gets Octagon up, superplexes him for the top. Love Machine hits a frog splash. So at this point, we are thinking, bang, 2-0, match over.
And I was thinking, yes, that was awesome, how they've won those two falls, tad short.
Well, that's it. At this point, I think we're sitting, just over an hour into a 3-hour show, so it's like, is that us done? That was quite good. I wish I'd maybe seen a bit more of that. But as you say, it's basically 2-3 falls in Lucha. The one team that's got the fall, they basically need to pin both opponents. So at this point, Guerrero and Artbar are now basically 1-0 up. So second fall starts. We've got Guerrero in well, Hijo de Santo. Lovely overhead suplex from Eddie, and then a standing vertical suplex as well. Love Machine beats down an Octagon, but Del Santo comes in, gives the technicals a bit of momentum. It's then a double suicide dive for Octagon and Del Santo. Back in the ring, Artbar gets a pin in Del Santo, and again, even the crowd at this point seem to be a wee bit confused as the match is still continuing even after Artbar's got that pin. But then first a miraculous comeback from Octagon. Levels the fall count as he quickly pins Guerrero with a hurricanrana, and then Love Machine pins him as well after a side Russian leg sweep. We're sitting at 1-1. So Del Santo gets the two near falls in Guerrero at the start of the third fall. Love Machine breaking up both. Eddie then tries a submission before Octagon comes in to break it up. Del Santo nails Eddie with an electric chair for the top rope, but again, Love Machine breaks up the pin. Guerrero hits back with a sunset flip to the outside, but back in the inside, Love Machine hits a band spinning tombstone pile driver on Octagon while the referee's back is turned and gets the pin. Chris, what do you make of the pile driver situation?
I like it because it implicates a move actually being dangerous and...
Yeah.
Because as they were saying on the commentary, someone has legitimately been put out because of the power driver. It implicates that is a move that hurts people.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, having it as a banned move, you seeing someone do it behind the ref's back or in this case, behind the technico ref, but in front of the heel ref,
the
Rudo ref, and him not doing anything
mm-hmm.
plays into the whole of the storytelling of Lucha. You know, it's very much, you know, the whole two ref thing. That's
it's a really good
why
tool.
The two refs there.
Yeah, I do agree. It was brilliant. So see, that was behind the back of the technical ref, and we even get Antonio Peña, the owner of AAA, coming out to sell the injury on Octagon after the pile driver. So back in the action, we've got Guerrero superplexing Del Santo before a repeat of the first fall with Love Machine going for the frog splash for the top. But again, Del Santo kicks out. There's a top rope plancha from Del Santo to Eddie, but out of nowhere we then see Blue Panther again. He nails Love Machine with a pile driver of his own, and El Hijo de Santo levels the third fall. So we then got the heels getting the Rudos getting their comeuppance with that pile driver out of nowhere for Blue Panther. At this point, the crowd can sense the comeback coming from the two technicals. The crowd then basically explodes, and we kind of go into it's really more of a singles match now at this point with the Love Machine out with that pile driver and Octagon out as well. It's then Guerrero and Del Santo left to it themselves. Great resilience fell heel to Santo after several near falls, but he then reverses a full Nelson attempt for Guerrero to pin him in the third, pin him for the third fall, and the match is then over. Chris, you ever seen a 6 out of 8 falls match before?
No. the best I've seen is, you know, like an hour long Iron Man match where it's the amount of falls you get in the hour, which is sort of like late '80s stuff, but never a best of nine.
Yeah, best of 9, 6 out of 8, 8 in total. What was it? 2-1, 2-0, and 2-1 was my count. Yeah. I've lost count in a
minute. It's like a tennis score.
Exactly, it was like a set of tennis in the middle, you're right. So again, I don't know what you thought of the match. I thought it actually tipped the last match. I thought this again was match of the night so far for me.
I really liked it. It doesn't beat the six man though.
Still going with the six man in the middle.
Just because, Del Santo, I think is the weak link in this match.
Right.
And yes, the mask and the name Santo obviously means a lot because of his dad, from his dad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't think that he's all that.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, Octagonus looks really good. Guerrero and Art Barr look really good. And the fact that Barr wrestles quite a lucha style as well, he doesn't look out of place, unlike Madonna's
boyfriend
for one of the two Americans that are staples of AAA.
Yeah,
them two look really good.
Would you make it Guerrero in particular, Chris?
Wonderful mullet.
He's lost it.
Yeah,
now.
He did have a lovely mullet. I think both him and Barr could quite easily go into the American tag
one
team.
Of the big two.
Into one of the big two as a tag team, and definitely shake up both and put new life in both tag team divisions. I don't know if I'd put him on his own. Because obviously we've not seen him on his own.
Yeah, singles. But totally agree. I mean, as a double act, there was two of the new ones to me. I wasn't aware of a Love Machine or Guerrero. And I thought they were an amazing tag team.
I think they'd have to change their gimmick, because being the American team in America isn't
going
to make them as hated. Maybe they'd have to be the Mexican team in America.
Maybe need to be the Mexicans in America, yeah. As I say, brilliant match. As I say, that was the first of our main events. We're onto the cage match now. We've got Mike Tenay and Chris Cruz at the start. It's going to be between Perro Aguayo and Conan. Cruz and Tenay basically explain the history of these two. They used to be tag team partners. Conan then turned on his longtime friend, and they run through the previous matches that they've had, the achievements that they've made. And we've got the cage London with lights and music and pyro, big and that, building a big match feel to the main event. The match itself, just a bit of background knowledge on it, we've got Conan, the champion at this point, he's 29 years old, and we've got Perro Aguayo at 48, I think he's going to be 49 in a couple of months' time. What did you think of this kind of matchup prior to the match itself, Chris? What do you think of this is a pair?
It was one of those of looking at it going, why is this really old dude fighting this really jacked dude? But when they ran through their history and what they'd done, I was like, the story's there.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. You know, there's definite history between them.
Yeah, but it makes sense.
It's one of those of, is this guy just hanging on because, you know, he was good back in the day
with
Aguero being so old, much older than everyone else on the card.
That's that. But as I say, that's the partnership we've got. So that history's there, and they've got the steel cage here to settle this. Match rules again for this one, bit more standard to what we're used to. It is by escaping the cage only is the only way to win this one. So early on, we've got a pretty good showing of Conan's strength over his opponent. Aguayo goes for an early pin for some reason, but as I say, the match is escaped by the cage only. Conan throws Aguayo into the cage twice early on. Impero is actually cut open. So very early on, we've got blood in the match. It's a pretty slow start, but bear in mind at this point, we are just a silver an hour of pay-per-view time remaining. So Aguayo again goes for a pinfall, gets the best of a top rope fist fight with Conan. Chris, he goes for a pin again. There's three pinfalls here, and it's escape the cage only. Makes sense out of it for me.
He's old and has the onset of dementia.
That's about as good as I could make it myself. But maybe the shot to the head. He's bleeding. He's maybe a bit concussed. Maybe that's the story that they're trying to tell here. But as I say, three pinfalls early on. It's escape the cage only. So moving on, we've got Aguayo making the escape attempt. He's finally mastered the match. Tries to escape the cage. Conan gets him with a low blow to get the advantage back. Really dangerous looking back body drop here. Conan kind of pretty much lands in the back of his neck. But luckily it doesn't seem as if there's any issues. At this point we've then got the cameras cutting to backstage, and we've got Eddie Guerrero and Madonna's boyfriend, or Luis Piccoli, coming out. Guerrero gets it to ringside, basically blinds Pero Aguayo with the contents of a plastic cup. And then Conan works him over with a pair of brass knuckles. Aguayo at this point is just an absolute bloody mess. Starts to fight back. Conan again levels him with the brass knuckles. As Eddie Guerrero then tries to enter the cage, we get the technical stable with the Dynamite Brothers coming out to clear house. Aguayo then gets back in control of the match. Top rope double stop onto Conan, and escapes to pick up the win. Chris, they love a comeback in Lucha, don't they?
Yeah, it was very much the standard, but face gets an absolute hiding.
Yeah.
The heels cheat and, you know, and then here comes the big superhero babyface.
Yeah.
It is great story that it's that your hero can overcome.
Prevail, yeah. What do you think of the match itself?
It was a solid cage match. You know, I think Aguero was limited with what he can do.
Yeah,
at
that age.
But, you know, there was good psychology in it. He took a good hiding. He bled more than Ric Flair has in recent
years.
Which
is saying something, yeah.
Yeah, he reminds me of Flair in the 80s, the amount of blood coming out of him.
Mm.
You know, he gets the hiding and comes back as the hero. So it's a very basic
story. Saying the fans
story.
All happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Which anchor the show overall?
I really, really liked it. It was a really good showing of everything Lucha.
Yeah.
It's a great entry point for people to come in and see it.
Mm-hmm.
There obviously wasn't massively keen on the midgets, but then it's my whole thing with, is it very calming and free-showy and exploitive. But I like the six mans because it meant that you got to see different people working quick styles.
Yeah.
I think as a showcase, having the two six mans meant that you got 12 different guys on the show that all worked a little bit with each other. They showed a bit of what all of them do. The rules were a little bit confusing at times, but as soon as that first thing happened in the 2 out of 3 falls match, when after that first fall, when you realized they had to pin both, and the captain thing as well with the six mans, once you got it, it made sense. Obviously,
once you get the rules, the technical prowess it's kind of testament to how good the guys in those matches were. They were able to overcome that and still enjoy a good match in the back of it. I thought I totally agree with that. I don't think I could even really pinpoint a bad match in the card. As I say, we've got our kind of moralistic kind of issues with the first match with the minis, but as I say, the full card I thought was really good, top to bottom. There was some great, great talent in it. As I say, maybe from my point of view, I thought maybe a bit overbooked for the six mans, but when you explain it, and you kind of talk about for your side, I can totally agree with the matches that were there. There was good stories, there was good spots, there was good technical wrestling. Can't really ask for much more. What do you think of WCW's kind of outlook on this? They try to break this product into an American audience. How do you think they'll get on with it?
I think that it's a good concept, because it is a great change from watching WCW or standard WWF stuff. Mm-hmm. It is a really good change, and if you expose people to it in its natural habitat, you'll be more appreciative of it if they bring it into theirs.
Yeah.
It's like, I was thinking with this, I'd quite like to see the same sort of a show, but from Japanese mm-hmm. wrestling mm-hmm. and the Japanese style. So obviously then if people are exposed to something, you can then induct it into your product, and it doesn't stand out so much, or doesn't need as much explaining.
Yeah.
Because people have already seen what it comes from, if you understand,
Totally,
know what I mean.
Yep.
One thing I was going to bring up that you missed in the cage match, Eddie Guerrero and the fan. When the fans hitting him outside when the rest of the faces came down.
Oh, I missed that.
The fan smacks him. A fan hits him because he's by the barrier. And Eddie
right.
goes nuts and rams the barrier into the fan. And then starts swinging and is like throwing bombs.
Right.
as in a boxing expression into mm-hmm. this fan in the front. And the faces are there just literally in sort of pulling him off and pushing him away. And
right.
he just keeps going at him. And then at the end, once the cage has gone up, Conan's out there as well. And mm-hmm. Conan looks like he's going to go and go after this kid
right.
in the crowd.
See, I never even see it. There you go. We've all got a reason to watch this again there, just even to see that
Is
moment
it,
at the end. I never even seen that. Chris, score rating for the show?
8 out of 10.
8, I've went with 7. I thought it was pretty solid. Good first opening look at the Lucha style. I've gave it 7 overall. As I say, it was just a wee bit overbooked for me in the middle with the 2 six-mans and then the mini six-man as well. But I say, for a first look, and so many guys that's in that, there's a Benoit and Scorpio, I knew going in. Guerrero, I thought, was really impressive. Mysterio Jr. looks like a bit of a star at the age of 19 as well. I thought it was really, really impressive. And as I say, I would definitely recommend it to watch to anyone over the last kind of couple of months we've seen in the Nationals. It's definitely up there with match quality, and it's certainly a different style to kind of look at as well, which hopefully we can see getting exposed to a more national audience in the next couple of years. Chris, I really like mid to late 80s WCW pay-per-views. Anywhere I can listen to a podcast or anything about them?
Oh, I know somewhere that you could do that.
Where is that?
It's at Super Brawls.
Brilliant.
Super Brawls is a project that I've just started, where I've gone back to 1983. With my mate Tom, and we're going through all the major shows that we can get hold of from WCW, but we pretty much started in NWA. We started at Starrcade 83. We will run through until whenever they finish. The plan is any major shows that we can find, because we've just finished a trio of Battle of the Belts. We're trying to see if we can find some of the Great American Bash stuff, but a lot of it's just highlights, so we're missing them. We're going to go through all the pay-per-views, all the clashes, and just basically chronologically go through what happens and what matches to go and find and rewatch and what to stay away from.
And Chris, where can we find that show?
That's at Super Brawls on iTunes. At Super Brawls on Twitter and Super Brawls on Facebook.
Brilliant. So that pretty much does us for this project's look into the wacky world of the Lucha Libre. Thanks for everybody to join us in this wee side trip to Mexico. And we'll be back after this review in WCW Clash of the Champions.
Excellent. That will end this part of the show. And this volume, we were going to do two, we're now going to do three, because Dale and Chris went so long there. No problem there. But that's what happens when you put someone else in charge of the show. So volume three, we're going to be back reviewing WCW Clash of Champions. And we're also going to be looking at Randy Savage's impending arrival in WCW. Dale, we've got a really odd thing here in that we're recording certain things out of segment and, like, we've got people on different bits, but this is your last part in this month's show. So what was your moment of the month from the bits you saw?
For me, Bob, it's still got to be going back to ECW and looking at the Sandman's retirement ceremony. Beautiful story, wonderfully told. Dare I say, nobody saw it coming. Thought it was brilliantly delivered.
Fantastic, fantastic. Anyway, big thanks to Chris Lacey. Chris, you're on Twitter personally as well, aren't you?
I am at Lacey555666.
And it's just at Super Brawls, isn't it, your podcast account?
Yes.
That's right. And Dell, you're on Twitter?
Yep, Twitter, Dell_Muir.
I suppose, given that people might be listening to this kind of on its own or out of segment, I should probably end the show now. It does feel weird we're in the middle, effectively. But yeah, I'm at Bobby Bamber on Twitter if you'd like to find me. We're at Wrestling20YRS on Twitter as well. Wrestling20YRS.com for our new website. We're starting doing blogs and stuff up there. I did a story this month going back to ECW talking about, I said the untold story of ECW and WCW working together in 1994. Untold in the sense that the WWE won't really ever tell you the story, but we've kind of covered it a lot this year on the show, and so I kind of put that into a blog form. We've got a lot of other blogs. As we recorded this, I've just been finishing up a blog about the Nasty Boys feud with Cactus Jack from earlier in 94 as well. So all of that and all of our old episodes, etc., etc. We're on iTunes, we're on RSS, that's all on the website. We've got a Facebook page now, facebook.com/wrestling20YRS on there as well. This is volume two of the show, volume one, which if you're listening in order, was the WWF part, looking at Survivor Series and Randy Savage's departure from the company, as well as the dual WWF title changes. Bret Hart losing the title to Bob Backlund, then Bob Backlund dropping the title to Diesel before the end of November. Volume 3, which is, in theory, the show you'll be going on to listen to next, will be looking at WCW Clash of the Champions, along with Randy Savage's impending arrival in WCW. So until next time, which for many of you will be the next clip of the next episode, I've been Bob Bamber, he's been Del Muir, he's been Chris Lacey. This has been the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. Goodbye.